This is Jay Sekulow, 5 days from the election.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
5 days till midterms. President Trump making his final push for Republicans at a campaign blitz across the country.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
The president hitting the campaign trail hard, holding nearly a dozen rallies before next Tuesday. Today, he travels to Missouri, but the push started last night in Florida, and the key issue was immigration.
And now, chief counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Well, we're 5 days out from the midterm elections, and we want to know what are the issues that are most important to you, what trends you're seeing in your county, what in your district, in your state. This is going to be a very, very interesting Tuesday night, but now Jordan's thinking it's probably going to be a very, very interesting Wednesday morning.
Yeah. Well, I think when you look at a lot of these toss-ups in there in the West Coast, and if you're down to whether or not the House remains in Republican hands or goes to the Democrats, you're looking at races that, again, that the polls will not be closing sometimes until it's already 11 o'clock at night on the East Coast or midnight on the East Coast. So very late if you're talking about numbers of 3 to 5 seats that could determine who controls the House of Representatives. That's one model. The other model is that you already know who's gotten to 218, the Republicans and the Democrats, before a number of those toss-ups, which are on the West Coast, come in. On those toss-ups, by the way, there are only 4 Democrat seats considered toss-ups in the House of Representatives, 30 Republican, a number of those in places like California, in blue states, where the property tax issue and the tax cuts is an issue at play for Republicans trying to hold on to their seat. But I think it's either a very late night or a very early one, because it's either a wave election and you know then where things are going, or if you're talking about a House that's going to be decided by 2 or 3 votes, you're going to have to wait to see how some of these races come in places that are, for those on the East Coast, are going to be coming in very late at night.
Dan, what is your sense that you're getting in Washington when you're talking to staffers and congressmen and senators? What do they think is going to happen here?
Jay, I think there's an increasing sentiment that it's going to be a very late night or an early morning, I think, at least in the House of Representatives. I think the Senate will be decided early in the night. I think Republicans will probably get to 53, 54, 55 seats in the Senate. But to Jordan's point, if you look at like the top 40 most competitive districts in the House, virtually every one of them is held by Republicans. But a lot of them, Jay, I mean, probably 3/4 of them are in districts that Hillary Clinton won. So that's the dynamic that Jordan's talking about. Does the Hillary Clinton voter win out, or does the Republican voter who voted for the incumbent went out? Jay, I think it's going to be really close. I think it will be decided the morning after. My own personal sentiment, I think Republicans just might hold on in the House.
I tend to think that, too. I don't think by a lot, necessarily. I think by probably 2 to 3, 4 votes, 4 seats, but I think that's possible. Harry, let's talk. If there is, there's a lot more at stake here than people realize because, and again, not taking a partisan side of this, but if you're a Democrat, controlling the House would be, even by a few votes, is significant. If you're a Republican, losing the House can be significant, and all of that can affect the president.
Absolutely. So the Democrats have already ramped up plans to launch a series of investigations aimed at the president and aimed at thwarting his agenda. So Representative Adam Schiff has announced that he is going to try to tie the Trump Organization in with Russians going forward, and he's going to suggest, or he has suggested, that Russian interference swung the election in President Trump's favor. I don't think there's any real evidence of that, but clearly no. That's the direction that Democrats intend to go.
I think this is what you need. Look, there's a lot at stake. I think it's fair to say that the president's agenda is in part at stake. I mean,
yeah,
I think that's
right. Getting legislation through is already very difficult, even with the House Republicans and Senate Republican majorities. But I just say, imagine this: Adam Schiff is Intelligence Committee chair. That significantly changes things, and that only takes one vote to the Democrat majority.
So if you're a Democrat, that's where they want to. I mean, that's one vote will make a difference. All right, so let me tell you what we want to do.
Committees.
We want to talk about the issues that matter most to you. What are the issues motivating you in this election? And what do you see as those key things? And what in the past has motivated you? Is the Kavanaugh hearings, was that an issue? Was it an issue of immigration? Is it taxes? What are the issues that matter most to you? We'll take your call. Hope to hear from all 50 states. 800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Back with more in a moment.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life, standing up for our good friend Israel, working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington, battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world, and a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Real Clear Politics right now has it as this way they have it. 203 seats for the Democrats, 198 for the Republicans, 34 are toss-ups. The problem is the 34, the difficulty for the Republicans, the 34 that top that are toss-ups are mostly Republican held, almost all but five are Republican held seats.
30 Republican toss-ups, 4 Democrat toss-ups. That's based off kind of a poll of polls. So sometimes we're starting to look at, we have a question that came in, for instance, on West Virginia's Senate race. Any news there? Debbie writes it on Facebook. Now, if you look at the poll of polls, Joe Manchin is still up 8-9 points. But if you look at the two most recent polls in West Virginia, His lead has been cut to only 5. That's almost within a margin of error. So he's dropping. You're not going to see that in the poll of polls number. But if you look at the polls that now, if that trends, if 2 more days and 3 more days of only plus 5 showing, suddenly that's a race that you start putting back into a Senate race that is a toss-up. Now, it has been moved to a lean Democrat from a likely Democrat. I don't think there will be questions made. The president has a schedule. But remember, he can keep adding to it. And if it looks like a Joe Manchin type is really beatable, you could potentially see the president spending more time in West Virginia, not just for the congressional candidates, but for the candidate there, Patrick Morrisey, who's the attorney general of West Virginia, who's obviously cut into the lead.
He sure has. I mean, when you get within the margin of error, that's significant. Harry, of course, there was a large underreporting in the 2016 race for the president. I mean, I think the president probably underpolled 10 or 12%, and I think nationally probably still does. How do you think that plays into this? It's different. It's a midterm election. President's technically not on the ballot, but in a very real sense, he's on the ballot.
Well, I think.
Let me finish one thing. Historically, understand also that the party in power generally loses the House in the midterms. President Obama had 2 pretty big shellackings in midterm elections.
I mean, they were easy general elections for him.
Yeah.
So the presumption is that the party in power will indeed lose seats. And so I think that is coloring, if you will, our view of the polls. But even the Washington Post admits, while Democrats are up in early polling, a reality may indeed be quite different because the edge that the Democrats enjoy is still largely within the margin of error. That's number one. And number two, there's evidence on the ground that a large number of early voters are indeed Republican, which is the reverse of the historical past. And so that will likely lead to a very tight election eve, and people will remain up perhaps all night in order to sort this out. But I think it is clear at the end of the day that there's some likelihood that there's some underreporting with respect to Republican sentiment going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Janelle calling in from Kansas has a good point. We're asking people what motivates them to get out and vote. I mean, you know, I early voted yesterday with my wife. So a lot of people, I think, I could tell where we are taking advantage of that. There was a line, probably a bigger line for early voting than there would be that I've seen on election day at that time of day, kind of midday. So after the lunch rush, after, you know, before an evening rush. And there was a lot of people voting. And so, again, it felt like there was just a turnout high, probably where we are on both sides of the aisle. But let's go to Janelle in Kansas on line one. Janelle, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Janelle.
Thank you for taking my call,
sure.
Jay.
Sure.
God bless you for all that you do.
Thanks.
I just wanted to comment that, to me, this election represents maintaining the only really truly free nation in the world, and our system of government, our constitutional government, has allowed us to survive over and over huge sways in who we elect. But my concern is we're getting away from our constitutional government, and so I really feel like it's critical that we manage to not give way to socialism.
So here's that's a very good question, a very good point you raised. So, Than, let me ask you this practical effect. Give us the practical effect, impact, if the House switches, even if it's net plus three for the House Democrats, what does that mean for the administration? What does that mean for the way things go, the loss of chairmanships? What happens?
It means almost everything in the House of Representatives, Jay, because unlike the Senate, the most important vote that a member of the House will cast during their entire career is the vote for Speaker, Jay. So it only takes 218 votes out of the 435 to elect the next Speaker. The Speaker, you know, if there's no change atop the leadership, would be either Nancy Pelosi, or then there will be a race on the Republican side. The Speaker, Jay, and the leadership team then determines the chairmanships of the committee. So oversight responsibilities, investigation responsibilities, determine what goes on the floor for a vote, all of that happens inside the majority party. So even if it's a one-seat advantage, Jay, the most important vote that a new member would cast would be for Speaker.
So this, which raises, of course, the question, is the impact of Nancy Pelosi as Speaker, what does that do to this election cycle? I mean, is that playing as a big issue?
I think it does play as a big issue to Republicans. It's a motivating factor to Republicans. They realize to an extent what it means on legislative priorities that have not yet been handled, like the healthcare issue, like immigration. If Nancy Pelosi is Speaker of the House, you're not going to get those handled. I mean, it's just you're going to have to move on to the next election cycle and really fight back just to maintain the status quo of where you are legislatively. I mean, think of Maxine Waters as the head of the House Financial Services Committee. Is threatening the banks and threatening Wall Street and threatening financial institutions. So the implications this can have on the economy, the president's correct. I mean, when you have candidates like Maxine Waters out there saying, when I get that gavel, the banks better be scared. I mean, that will, and Wall Street better be nervous. Guess what? They will be. And we will all feel that in investments and 401ks. And so the president is right when he says that this could hurt the pocketbooks of Americans because of the rhetoric being used by the left. Like, they're coming after the financial institutions, even though we've gotten through those crises and things have been on the up and up for the American worker. They're trying to, again, kind of spin it. So I think, she is a motivating factor for Republicans more so than Democrats. I don't think a lot of Democrats are getting out to vote for Nancy Pelosi, but I think plenty of Republicans do to make sure and hope that she does not take that gavel back.
It's interesting what you said with Stephen Colbert. This is kind of an interesting take. This is Nancy Pelosi.
Well, let me say this. Up until today, I would have said if the election were held today, we would win.
What happened today that changed that?
What now I'm saying is we will win.
So, I mean, this is the kind of way they're running the thing. And I think Nancy Pelosi's been the subject of a lot of ads. But a lot of Democrats, especially moderate Democrats, aren't talking about that they would even vote for Nancy Pelosi as the Speaker.
Absolutely. Instead, they're running away from Nancy Pelosi because in many middle-of-the-road districts throughout America, her name is toxic, along with Maxine Waters and Dianne Feinstein. And so those three names may indeed be huge motivating factors for conservative voters and middle-of-the-road voters who have seen their lives improve over the last couple of years under the current administration. And the Democrats, particularly the leaders of the Democratic Party, are threatening that progress.
Now, I do say this, on the Senate side of this, I think that the Republicans will pick up seats. I really believe that the Republicans will be looking at somewhere between 53 and 55. I mean, we'll talk about the states that are in play, but that's kind of my take on it right now. And I think the Senate Republican Committee kind of feels the same way. I mean, you can't drop your guard for a minute if you're a Republican, just like you can't drop your guard if you're a Democrat. But because you're 5 days out, which, by the way, in politics, an election is a lifetime.
Yeah, but the difference here, Jay, as you know, is the political battlefield in the Senate is played on exactly the opposite terms that we talked about in the House. We talked about how the House are defending almost every district that's in the toss-up category by many of these rating systems. Well, Jay, virtually every seat that's in play is held by Democrats in the Senate. Of the 35 seats up, 26 of them are held by Democrats. And, Jay, 10 of them are held by Democrats in states that Donald Trump won, in some cases by overwhelming majorities. I mean, Jordan was talking about West Virginia. Donald Trump won West Virginia by 42 points. If you talk about a state that the president carried by 42 points and the incumbent, Joe Manchin, is under 50%, somewhere between 47 and 48%, no matter what the polls say in that situation, Jay, someone like Joe Manchin has definitely cause to be concerned.
I will. We're going to get into the Senate side of this when we come back from the break. Let me tell you what we have started today. Today, November 1st, we've started a matching challenge campaign. This is November, December, our two biggest months of the year. So we are asking for your support for the American Center for Law and Justice. What that means is this. Any amount you donate to the ACLJ, we get a matching gift for. I'm holding in my hands a brief that we filed with the Supreme Court of the United States. The case is Rebecca G., Secretary of Louisiana Department of Health and Hospitals versus Planned Parenthood of the Gulf Coast, Inc. This is a brief in support, an amicus brief in support of the petition for certiorari. It involves Medicaid funding with Planned Parenthood getting money or not getting money. This is a major case. It's in conference at the Supreme Court tomorrow, so we should know by Monday, maybe even tomorrow, if there's a grant. So this is a really big deal, a really big case. Your support for the American Center for Law and Justice, whether it's Pastor Brunson, whether it was a CABB yesterday, or a Supreme Court case involving the issue of life, your support of the ACLJ makes a huge difference. So go to ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up, at aclj.org.
All right, we've been talking about the House of Representatives. I want to turn our attention to the United States Senate and get everybody's consensus. My consensus is, and we're going to play a soundbite from Claire McCaskill, because she's in real trouble electorally in Missouri right now, it looks like. But before we do that, my feeling is that the Senate's retained the Senate, and Republicans retained the Senate, and maybe a pickup of to 53 to 55. That's kind of where I see it. We'll go through the states in particular in a moment. Jordan, what do you see?
Yeah, I think the Republicans will add to their majority, so that could be anywhere between 2 and 5 seats. That's important for, as we see, judicial confirmations. If another Supreme Court nomination were to happen in those 2 years before the next election cycle, think about the how much easier it becomes when you have more than just 51 Republicans. If you've got 53 or 54 Republicans, you don't have those same margins and to deal with. And so, again, it's very important if the Senate maintains that control, judicial nominations remain on track.
Confirmation legislation that comes out of the House that you disagree with
becomes much easier with a few more Senate Republicans.
I think the biggest thing
also getting nominations confirmed for if there's a cabinet shift that is being reported, getting those nominations confirmed is still very smooth process with Republican majority in the Senate. And I think every prognosticator, though people have gotten these things wrong, are pretty confident right now Republicans retain control of the U.S.
I'll tell you
Senate.
Where I think it, I do think it would, you know, if you maintain that, let's say the House went Democratic and the Senate stays Republican, I think it thwarts legislation that is opposed to the president's agenda, unless there's bipartisan, and there can be bipartisan agenda. Maybe they can get some kind of comprehensive immigration reform done. I'd sure like to see that. Not never been able to happen in the last 20 years, but maybe it could. Who knows? But I will say this, that I think that the risk is if the Democrats control the House, so if you're a Democrat watching the broadcast, here's what you're going to see. You'll see different legislation. You'll see a different Speaker of the House. But you'll also see different committee chairmen. And as Harry's already mentioned, when you turn to the House side of that, so the Senate can't thwart this. That's the way the government, the Constitution's set up. Senate doesn't thwart, for instance, an inquiry. An investigation that the House wants to give. You mentioned that the Russia funding and the president's companies, were they in the conduits, which I think is absurd. But having said that, that doesn't mean they can't do an investigation on it, even though there's no evidence to support any of that.
You're absolutely correct. So if the Democrats take the House, I look for a large number of investigations that are grounded in fiction.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, they will be pursued, and it's very, very likely that these investigations will find a sympathetic audience largely with the media.
Yeah, I don't think in the court of law or the court of the voters ultimately. It's going to be a very close house. Anyways, but they may find a sympathetic media, but there has to be an allegation that's actually supportable as a violation of law, which so far in any of these inquiries that have come up, there have been none.
You're precisely correct.
As it relates to the president.
But nonetheless, they will continue to launch these investigations as a way of hampering the incumbent's agenda.
All right, let's go ahead and take a phone call here at 1-800-684-3110.
Andre called in from Los Angeles, California, online too. Andre, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Andre.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call and for all the wonderful work that you do freeing Pastor Brunson and Yassir Habibi from some horrible situations.
Yep.
I have a question regarding the birthright that President Trump wants to do by executive order. People are saying that if he does it by executive order, it will not pass. But if he does it by going through Congress, it might have a chance of passing through the Supreme Court. My question is, why does he have to do anything for a law that's already in the books?
Well, it's because the 14th Amendment and birthright citizenship has been interpreted in a particular way that allows for exactly what it says, birthright citizenship. So for it to be changed, the legal arguments, there's two sides of the legal argument. One is people will argue the 14th Amendment is clear that a person born in the United States that's subject to the jurisdiction thereof, the laws of the United States, is a citizen as a right of birth. That's not true for most countries, but we do have a constitution. They don't, and we have amendments to the Constitution. Then the other side of the argument is, no, they're not subject to the jurisdiction of the states in the way that was meant by the founders, and therefore they would not be. So whether it's done by executive action, an executive order, or if it's done by statutory through Congress, let me tell you one thing for sure. it will be challenged. Yeah. And the only and let me tell you where it ends up. It ends up at the Supreme Court of the United States.
Congress has statutorily defined a lot of this. They kept the general. When they did statutorily define it, they kept the general. You know, if you're born here, that's part A.
Right.
Now, part B, they start getting into one parent's an American, one isn't. You're born overseas. You're born on a military base. You're born, all these different scenarios Congress has legislated on.
But that's
define.
Where the who's controlling the House and Senate will matter also. Well,
yeah, because
through.
that'd have to go through both House and the Senate. And let me tell you, if the Democrats are in control, they're not going to take up legislation on
right.
that. I think that's why the president's saying maybe throw out executive order just to get it out there into the legal processes.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about the Senate for a minute here, Dan. Yeah. Claire McCaskill, Missouri, the Democratic seat, her poll numbers are not – she's down right now about two to three points.
Yeah.
It's very so it's very close. What's your feeling there? And I'm going to play something she said. She's running more like she's a pro-Trump here. I'll play her statement in a minute.
Yeah, it's pretty ironic that now when she's down by 2 points right before the election and in real danger of losing that seat, Jay, she sure sounds a lot different than the senator that she's been here in Washington, D.C.
Did she vote for Brett Kavanaugh or vote against Brett Kavanaugh?
She wrote against Brett Kavanaugh.
Did she vote for the repeal of the Affordable Care Act or against?
She voted against the repeal. She voted for Obamacare.
Yeah, let me play you her statement. Here it is.
I voted for over 70% of President Trump's judicial nominees. 70%. I voted for more than half of his cabinet members. I vote with him half the time. He signed 38 of my bills into law. That doesn't sound like, to me, somebody who is knee-jerk. Some of my colleagues are knee-jerk against the president. I don't get up every day figuring out how to fight the president. I get up every day trying to figure out how I can fight for Missourians.
So what does that tell you, then?
She's in a really
tough race. That's what it tells me.
Well, first of all, I think she's counting every unanimous consent that the Senate granted as a vote in favor of Donald Trump's agenda, which just does not make sense. But look, the Missouri voters here, Jay, they've seen through it. I mean, these are really troubling numbers for Claire McCaskill. It looks to me like Josh Hawley is going to win that state. And I would just say, if you zoom out a little bit, what does that mean for Democrats? They needed to pick up both Republican seats they had a shot at and then win everything else on the board to get the Senate majority. I think if you're only looking at those Missouri numbers, Jay, what it tells you is that Republicans are a virtual lock to hold on to the Senate. The question is, how much? Is it going to be 50? Is it going to be 53? Is it going to be 57? I don't really think there's much doubt who's going to be in the majority.
Yeah. I tend to be with you on this. I think that's right. We're not going to have time for another question before the end of this half hour. If you're with us for the next half hour, which you should be, we're going to get into some more of the kind of details of the states that are in play for the Senate. Want to talk about that? We'll talk maybe about some of the governor races too. And we'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We got some, phone lines open for you, 800-684-3110. Let me also tell you this. We are in a matching challenge campaign here at the ACLJ for the months of November and December. Those are our two most significant financial months of the year for the ACLJ. You saw this week the release of Asia Bibi. You saw 2 weeks ago the release of Pastor Brunson. You saw the win that we've had in so many significant pieces of litigation. And there's another one where we filed an amicus brief. That's a friend of the court brief urging the Supreme Court to hear a major pro-life case. Again, we may know about that as early as tomorrow. Your support for the ACLJ makes a huge difference. We have a matching challenge campaign. Jordan's going to explain to you how that works. We encourage you to participate in that.
Yes, our matching challenge campaign, whatever you're able to donate is doubled. So a $20 donation becomes $40, a $50 donation becomes $100, but it also means a $5 donation becomes $10. So it's a great time to support the work after we've had these victories at ACLJ. That's ACLJ.org.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Become a member and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
5 days till midterms. President Trump making his final push for Republicans in a campaign blitz across the country.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
All right, so the Real Clear Politics average, just what it has right now, the 203 House, they think are clearly going to, Senate House seats will be Democratic. 198 clearly to be Republican, leaving 34 as a toss-up. And of those 34, all but four are held seats currently held by Republicans. Republicans have a real challenge to keep the House of Representatives. We've got a lot of calls that have been on hold here. I'm going to go ahead and do something we don't normally do in the first 5 minutes of the broadcast, and that is we're going to take a call. 1-800-684-3110. We want to know what matters to you. We're talking about the Senate seats that are in play for this segment, but let's go ahead and take a call.
Yeah, Michael's called in from Ohio on line six. Michael, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Michael.
Hey, guys. How you doing today? Thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to share a little poll data. You know, back in the 2016 election, one of the things that threw the media into a frenzy was the fact that the voting didn't, the outcomes didn't match the polls.
Right.
And we knew that they were oversampling Democrats and people left of center in a very, very, you know, disgusting manner. And if you look at the poll data on a lot of these races, you know, I'm following the Dan Scovino style of looking at these numbers, they're still massively oversampling Democrats compared to Republicans. And what they've done is when independents used to make up 20% of the poll, independents now make up sometimes 35 to 50% of the poll. So I think they're still burying a lot of that oversampling in the independents. They might be throwing progressive liberals into the independent category. And you can really figure that out when you drill down into the poll data and you look at the age groups, you know, and how they're voting. And I think people are going to be stunned at this election.
It's always easier to figure out the polls. You take it with a grain of salt. What they do is give you an idea of momentum inside of a state. It's much easier for pollsters to do this by state than it is in general elections, by the way. So you look at a state race like Claire McCaskill's. You know that race is very close. Does that mean on election day that Claire McCaskill or Josh Hawley couldn't end up winning by 8 or 9 points? No. But it means that the race is at this time until voters are still deciding. So, yes, there can be oversampling. But let's put it this way. If they're oversampling right now for Democrats, it's barely giving them a margin.
Right.
I mean, so that would mean that the Democrats, if they are oversampling Democrats in these polls, it's not looking that great for them because it barely gets them the House, and it means a lot of losses in the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, I mean, so much for a blue wave, Harry.
So I think the caller makes an excellent point. It's very, very possible that the polling data is grounded in a flawed model. So they've made certain assumptions with respect to the electorate, and indeed, these models have been proven wrong in the past. It's very possible they're wrong now as well, and we shall certainly see next week.
All right, we're taking your calls. We want to know what are the issues that matter most to you. What concerns you? How do you see things in your state or your district? 1-800-684-3110. Than. The president is going to Indiana twice, Florida, he was there yesterday, Montana, Tennessee again, West Virginia, Missouri. And where do you see the Senate seats in play right now? A Republican pickup is where?
Well, all the seats you just named where President Trump is going. But look, I think they're in the 10 states that Democrats are defending that Donald Trump won, and in the one state, Nevada, where a Republican is defending the seat that Hillary Clinton won. So, you know, the states that would be in play for Republicans to make pickups are Indiana, West Virginia, Montana, North Dakota, Missouri, Florida, and several others as well, Jay. The playing field for Democrats that they're defending, it is about as broad as you're ever going to see in the United States Senate.
What do you think the pickup is for the Republicans in the Senate?
I think it's a bare minimum of two, and if there happens to be a red wave that the president is talking about, don't be shocked if you wake up with 56 or 57 seats.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're somewhere in there. At least a couple.
Bold prediction by Finn.
Maybe more. I mean, you're not getting to 60, but I mean, you're talking about a much better number when you're talking about confirmations, and you're talking about on the judicial side and on the appointment side for the executive branch.
It really becomes important if the House is Democratic. If you're a Democrat
and you're fighting back,
you want to be able to get your legislation through. It's going to be tough if the Republicans can block it on the Senate side. Vice versa. I mean, so that's where this all makes a huge difference. All right, we'll take your calls when we come back from the break.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, defending human life, standing up for our good friend Israel, working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington, battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world, and a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
We're at the crossroads. You know what? Maybe play that at the end of the broadcast. A little music to lighten the load here. Little crossroads. We got a brand new videos hope to have up soon that we'll be able to use during the breaks here. That the band did a charity concert for the Waltrip Brothers back a couple weeks ago. We had a good time, played about seven or eight songs. So hopefully we'll get that edited and ready to go pretty soon. All right, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Dolly on Facebook said, I voted early. I was surprised by the long lines in our little town of 835 people. I think this is, I mean, we saw during the break for our friends on Facebook and Periscope or watching on TV that there are reports that it could be a 50% voter turnout. You don't think that, George?
That would be very big. I mean, that's getting...
What would that mean?
That means that all the polls, you throw them out the window. You cannot utilize them because these are polls based off turnout models generally on the past midterm elections. So none of these polls could possibly be accurate if the turnout is at that kind of level. If you're at 50% of registered voters, you're not that far off from a presidential year election number.
What do you think, Harry? If it's a 50%?
If there's a 50% turnout, it means precisely what Jordan suggested, that the models are indeed wrong, and you can throw out virtually every single assumption that has been made by so-called experts in the field, and many of them perhaps should join the unemployment line.
Van, do you think that there's a possibility of a 50%? What is the normal vote? Midterm voter turnout last year was last time was it 36%? I think. So what's the normal? Normal's about 36, 38, right?
Somewhere in the mid-30s. I don't have the exact number in front of me. But, Jay, if it's 50%, you're going to see a wave one way or another. I would say it's probably more likely to be a red wave because, look, this president is the one that has consistently defied these models. He did it just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And, look, I mean, you only have to have an outperformance of about a percent or two to be dozens of House seats and, you know, a half a dozen Senate seats. So it sounds like you're talking on the fringes when you talk about 1% or 2%, but that swings a whole lot of races, Jay.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and take calls. 1-800-684-3110. Who's next?
Yeah, let's go to Audrey in Arkansas on line one. Audrey, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Audrey.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I really appreciate all the information that y'all are putting out there for us. I'm living in Arkansas now. I was a Missourian, but I'm hoping that Clarence Castle is out of office by the end of this. But we have early voting here in Arkansas, and I've got like a day and a half left of early voting.
Yep.
And I'm trying to decide, do I go into early voting, or do we do like we did in 2016 and let the Democrats think they've got this?
No, I look. I mean, I would just tell you vote. Listen, I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, Green Party, Libertarian. Vote. Whether you do it early or you do it the day of, it doesn't affect the final outcome. I do it for convenience. I mean, that's why I do it. If I'm in town where I live for a day, which is not that often these days, yeah. I was able to do that and vote. So I think that's the
That problem of so many of the need for absentee, which actually I think created a lot more concern for people. Is absentee ballots, these paper ballots that get mailed out and you got to mail back in. The actually going to early vote is the same as going on election day, using the same machines, the same workers. It's a serious process. If you notice the difference between voting on a primary and voting early voting in the midterms this year, and now it's so much more available across the country. So I think it's just based off your schedule. And remember, if people are predicting these massive turnouts for a midterm, you may have a lot longer lines on election day than you typically would for a midterm. I mean, there are lines for early voting, which is it's pretty unheard of. Now, some of that's because many states are getting towards, as you are in the state, getting towards the deadline for early voting, but some allow it right up until the day before.
You know, tomorrow's broadcast I'd like to do is focus on some of the key states, like Georgia, which I still think it should not be as much in play as people say it is. We'll see. But Florida, where it's very close, look at the key kind of battleground states there. Let's go ahead and take another phone call, 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110.
Pete in Washington State, online too. Pete, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Pete, you're on the air.
Hi, I love everything you guys are doing, fine, and all the information you guys are putting out.
Yep.
I have a question.
Yep.
You know, you keep saying that Democrats, they take the House, they want to impeach and do all this, you know, everything that the president done so far. Why do they want to undo everything that we're going good for Americans, like the economy, the jobs, and all that? That, you know, why do they want to undo something that's working for America?
Well, I didn't say that the Democrats are going to want to go in there and impeach. I think that you know, they're not running on that. For a couple of reasons. Number one, they're afraid if they ran on that, it's going to motivate the Republican base in big numbers. That's number one. Number two, if they win by 3 or 4 House seats, I mean, it could be political theater. But you know, you've got to have a basis upon which you would move that. Now, when it's in, you know, if it's in that process, I'm not so concerned about impeachments. I think there'll be investigations going all over. That's the nature of these things when this happens. You would see that happen. But you know, you deal with it what you got. Look, there's different worldviews. There's different political worldviews out there. I mean, that's what it is. There's different political worldviews. And that's what you have to realize. So some people have a different view of how the country should be going forward. Others, you know, have a different view. The president said that the election is a choice between results and resistance. Let's take a listen.
This election is truly a choice between results and resistance. How about their whole theme? Obstruct, resist. What do you get out of that? Resist. They want to resist. Great, resist. It's the only thing they're good at. They resist and they stick together. That is true. They stick together. Great. But that's about it. They're bad policy, bad politicians, but they do stick together.
So the resist theme is that the Democrats get the House, they can then resist the president's agenda.
Yes, I mean, you can't resist any of the nominations. You can't resist any of his Supreme Court nominees or circuit court nominees, district court nominees, or cabinet-level nominees or other positions that need Senate confirmation. You can resist on legislation. I will tell you, though, typically that's not a strong enough message. That you need a message that is more positive than just resist, that is just anti. These anti votes will get you very close, but they rarely get you across the line. It's why today so many Republicans still have hope. I'd say it's hope, but they maintain hope that the House is still in play, that the House majority could remain Republican by very slim margins, but they still have that hope. Because the Democrats, while certainly energized, I'm not going to say they're not energized. They're energized. But when you're energized only against or to resist, are you appealing to anybody in the middle? Are you appealing to anybody moderate to really get off the sofa or take time away from work and their family that day, drag their kids along with them to wait in line to vote, find their polling place? Is that enough when their pocketbooks are doing pretty good? Their job is getting better for the most part. The resist message is hard to move past just the base voter. And I'm telling you, if we're talking about an election where the turnout is way higher than 30, in the mid-30s, and we're getting closer to 50%, which sounds just absurd for midterm. But if that is true, guess who you are no longer talking about? You're not just talking about motivating your base anymore. That means way past the base voted.
Yeah.
And that generally will favor, I think in this election, would favor Republicans.
Harry, what do you think?
Well, I think the Democrats are more committed to ideology than what works for the American people. But I think it's also clear that people do not live by ideology alone. They live on the basis of practical steps that improve their lives at the margin. Before President Trump's election, for instance, many Americans had not received a raise in real dollar terms in more than a decade. And so if you look at the unemployment numbers, down well below 4%, that's a historic record for many Americans, particularly minority groups in the United States. That's an improvement in the real lives of real people, and that counts for a lot.
So, Than, on your, from your view at Washington right now, what you're hearing, I mean, everybody's out campaigning, obviously, but you're still talking to staff. I mean, what is the sense that this kind of the president's theme of the resist and move forward, is this kind of the play?
Certainly in the House, Jay. And I mean, I think what Jordan just described is right in line with what the president said, and it's accurate. I mean, I think the data historically and then the polling numbers favor the Democrats in the House. But I think the Republicans are going to outperform that data, Jay, because of what Jordan just described. I mean, do you want the time that is allocated to the House to be determined by Nancy Pelosi, Adam Schiff, and Maxine Waters? I'm not so sure that's going to carry the day in the House. Jay, in the Senate, I would tell you that the sentiment is about margin. I mean, think about the Brett Kavanaugh fight. And when you started to lose the support for his confirmation from Lisa Murkowski and then Jeff Flake got wobbly in committee, that nomination was in jeopardy. Jay, if you have 53 or 54 Republican senators, then you don't have to worry nearly as much if one or two Republicans starts to slip on support for a Supreme Court nomination. So again, in the Senate, I think it's more about margin, and the difference between 51 and say 53 or 54, it's enormous.
All right, we're taking a break. When we come back, it's the last segment. You can ask us any question you want, 1-800-684-3110. It's because our phone lines will be open for you, 800-684-3110. We're also in a matching challenge campaign for the month of November. Just starting today, Jordan's going to let you know how you can participate in that.
Folks, you give us a call right now. You go to aclj.org. Whatever you're able to donate is doubled at aclj.org. So you go make the online donation. Just to give you an example, $5 donation is 10, 20 is 40, 50 is 100, 100 is 200. I mean, so every donation counts. We've had some big victories for the persecuted Christians this past month. Go to aclj.org, make that online donation, be part of the matching challenge.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
So during the break, we had Michael on Facebook asked if the GOP retains the House, any predictions on who will be the next speaker? So we'll go to Van Bennett on that so our radio audience can hear. Fan doesn't want to give a prediction on who, but he's going to say who the three likely would be and what scenarios would make more one more likely than the other.
Yeah, Jay, the three that who have expressed an interest in running and I think are at least somewhat viable are Kevin McCarthy from California, who's the number two in the House right now behind Paul Ryan, who is retiring. Number three in the House, Steve Scalise from Louisiana, and then Jim Jordan, who's a prominent member of the House Freedom Caucus. I think you would see all three of those run. There would probably be some horse trading behind the scenes, and I think one of those three would be the next speaker in the event the GOP retained control.
All right, and Jordan, you kind of think the same way?
Yeah, I think that you've got kind of the more conservative wing, which would have a better chance if you have less of those kind of mainstream Republicans hang on. Now, I mean, that's not great for Republicans necessarily. I mean, it's more losses. So I think also getting way out ahead of ourselves. I think that would be a great problem for Republicans to have if they're determining who gets to be the next speaker after Paul Ryan is retiring. So if that's a problem Republicans have and a vote they have to take and a battle internally, it's a wonderful battle for Republicans. I think they'd be celebrating just having that debate and having that vote.
All right, so here's another question. This came in from John on Facebook. Are moderate voters the key to how this election sways? Look, the voters in the middle are often the key votes here. I mean, there's no question about it. Harry, what do you think about that one?
Well, I would concur in your analysis. That has typically been the case in virtually every significant election in American history. And the number of voters who are in the moderate to independent category has actually grown as both parties have moved to perhaps more conflict. And so I think many independents are waiting to decide which of the two main parties they will support going forward. But ultimately, I think it will come down to the strength or weaknesses of individual candidates in individual districts. But also, it's clear beyond question that the administration of President Trump will be a factor for independent voters one way or another.
And I think, you know, Dan, independents always play a role. And when you have an election this close, it could be a decisive role.
Yeah, independents certainly play a role. You always have to start with the base, Jay, on both sides. And look, the reason that the party in power typically loses seats is because the leader of the party, the president, is not technically or, you know, really on the ballot. His name's not on the ballot. Of course, there's always an open question of how long the president's coattails are. And I think for the GOP, Jay, their biggest hope is that President Trump coattails are pretty long. And I think if you looked at 2016, I think there's a good argument to make that they are. So, yes, independent voters are always a big factor, I think. But before you even get to those independent voters, it's how enthusiastic is the base? How enthusiastic are the president's supporters to get out? How enthusiastic are his opponents to come out and vote against him?
Julie on Facebook asks, do you think the walkaway movement will have impact on midterms? Explain the movement.
This is some idea of Democrats walking away from their own party. I think that a lot of that's happened with President Trump. I mean, I think that he was a big impetus for that and why polling was off in the last presidential election. But again, in midterm elections, it is supposed to be about turning out base. Unless you have unbelievable turnout, which means you've surpassed just base voting of the 35% that really consider themselves Democrat, the 35% that are really consider themselves Republicans. If you get past that base voting, where it's always, what have you heard so much on TV? It's all about turning out the base to win these races.
Is it when you're 45% or 50?
Not if you hit 50% turnout anymore. And then it was a whole different election happening. You just didn't know what was going on.
And that's when you said all the polling data becomes meaningless.
All of it. I mean, it means it means that the kind of voter, the likely voter was not the usual midterm voter. And that may be the case because we're living under the Trump presidency, which has changed politics so significantly. It would be kind of weird, right, that this would be a traditional midterm election because we had such a non-traditional presidential election just 2 years ago. Why would this be traditional in the sense of numbers and turnout. I mean, the more and more I think about it, the more and more I think about it, the more I think it's not going to run the same traditional lines, because we live in a time when it feels so changed in the last 2 years.
Does it feel a couple days before the 2016 presidential election almost?
Yeah, where everybody started shifting to think, you know what, maybe Republicans have a shot here. Maybe Donald Trump has a shot here. I mean, it was closer than we are today. So today we're 5 days out. That was, again, I mean, you start give President Trump six or seven more campaign stops in this. He's got a dozen. But give him six or seven more and start seeing how you feel. This message resonating.
Do you think it's possible that we get to 50% or in that mid-40s? Even if you're at mid-40s, does that change the – what do the polls mean then if you're 45%?
Yeah, you're 10 that's 10 point higher than normal turnout. So the polls can't be utilized. I mean, because like Than said, it's very easy to sway then one or two. A poll of a plus five lead is meaningless if another 10% of the country shows up to vote.
Now, the Democrats might say that might help them, that if there's this large turnout.
Well, I think that's possible. I think we really don't know. But I also would point out that President Trump appears to be a tireless campaigner.
That's for sure.
And that will indeed motivate a significant number of voters.
Yeah.
And so if the turnout numbers are extremely high, we don't necessarily know how this will cut. But there's at least a strong possibility that this will cut in favor of conservative candidates.
You said earlier, before we went on the air in our meeting, that you thought that you could see a Republican House with up to 6 to 7 seats plus.
Absolutely. And I think if we get a high turnout, it could go beyond that. So I think a lot depends on where voters come out. So if the turnout is high nationally, will it be equally distributed throughout all the districts? I think it's far from clear that any one of us knows at this point
in
time. So,
Dan, what is your view on the turnout number first, and what does that mean to these polls?
Yeah, I don't see a scenario, Jay, where a turnout that high, approaching 50%, helps the Democrats. And here's why. I mean, you look at all the historical data, the party that is out of power, their base turns out. So there's not a whole lot of extra voters to find. They're already planning to go to the polls. It is the party in power that typically can't get all of their voters to the poll. And that's why the turnout is depressed. So if you get anywhere close to 50%, that means that President Trump and the GOP turned out a lot of voters who were not planning to vote. You have a big block of voters there who you did not expect to vote. And they turned out. If we get anywhere close to that number, Jay, that's when I think you start looking at 55 plus seats in the Senate for the GOP, and then a chance to retain control of the House. I really don't see a scenario where a 50% turnout is a positive outcome for Democrats.
No, I mean, I'm looking at these numbers. If you're getting anywhere close to 50%, you're only 5% away from what was a massive turnout in 2016, and that was 55%, a presidential election. Who are you talking about? It's what Than said, the non-traditional voter. Who does that favor? Not Nancy Pelosi. It favors Donald Trump. And it means that the non-traditional voter is saying, hey, Donald Trump's telling me to vote for these traditional kind of politicians who midterm elections I don't usually vote for. I'm going to do what Donald Trump is saying. I'm going to get up and I'm going to go and vote.
So you're pretty convinced the House stays Democrat.
Stays Republican. I'd say high turnout, great for Republicans. Great for Republicans. That's not the norm, by the way. But in this midterm, I would say so.
All right, well, that's going to do it for the broadcast today. Hey, don't forget, we're in a matching challenge campaign. It's the first day of the month of November. We are in this for November. We have one in December. Your support makes a huge difference. Any amount you donate to the ACLJ, any amount, we get a matching gift for. And Jordan's going to tell you the particulars on how that works, but we really want you to participate.
You go to ACLJ.org. You'll see matching challenge and a donate button, and anything you donate is doubled. So your $5 donation, that's all you donate, becomes $10. If you donate $10, it becomes $20 effectively for the ACLJ, and on up from there. So go online to ACLJ.org and be part of our matching challenge.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at ACLJ.org.